The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. It's the best martial arts because they're mixed. Woo!
All right. The UFC back in the apex a week after a storyline-filled pay-per-view event, and this week the 205-pound division is on the marquee as a former title challenger looks to halt the momentum of one of the division's rising contenders. As we welcome you to the live UFC Vegas 50 preview show here on MMAFighting.com, I am Mike Heck. We have an all-star cast joining me this week. We got Jose Youngs back home in Phoenix, Arizona. We got the Prince of Positivity, Alexander K. Lee, joining us as well. Gentlemen, let's get into this. Jose, we have a main event between Thiago Santos and Magomed Ankalaev. Santos took on John Jones, took him to the limit, even with a severe injury, basically fought the majority of that fight at UFC 239 on one leg, took over a year off to recover. Then he gets finished by Glover Teixeira, loses a decision to Alexander Rakic. Then he bounced back with a win over Johnny Walker in the main event back in October. And it wasn't a fight that wasn't very like aesthetically pleasing. Not one folks are going to be hankering to go back and watch again. But on the other end, we got Magomed Ankalaev, 7 wins in a row. He's coming off the big win against Volkan Ozdemir in October. And many believe, including our own Jed Meshew, that this might be the guy at 205. He just needs an opportunity to prove it. So your thoughts on this main event between Thiago Santos and Magomed Ankalaev?
This is fantastic main event. This is, like I always say, an extremely high-level martial arts competition that really does need no other storyline involved to get me excited. I mean, for as much as we talk about the UFC light heavyweight division kind of being one of the weaker and shallow divisions in the entire UFC, the premier organization in mixed martial arts, which is a far cry from what, like the early 2000s when we had Chuck, Tito, Rampage, Randy Couture, like all those guys kind of running house. At the 205-pound division, Ankalaev is only 29. I just looked that up this morning. I thought he was in his 30s. So we have a sub-30-year-old that's making waves in the light heavyweight division against someone who, yeah, the Johnny Walker fight kind of sucked in terms of excitement. The Rakic fight wasn't great. The Glover Teixeira fight was fun until it ended. And then the John Jones fight was, I thought, a very exciting fight. And before then, he was just murking fools, including former champion Jan Blachowicz. So I like everything about this fight. I do think it's Ankalaev's fight to lose. I just think he's an absolute monster. He should be undefeated. If he had lasted 1 second against Paul Craig, he might have already fought for the title because he'd be, what, like an 8-something fight win streak in the 205-pound division in the UFC. So love everything about this fight, and I'm very glad this is a 5-round main event. I know there's a lot of other awesome fights on this card, but specifically, I want to see Ankalaev over 5 rounds. I want to see Thiago Santos at 5 rounds to decapitate a fool. I love everything about this fight.
AK, we talked about Thiago's last performance against Johnny Walker. And yes, it was not a fun fight. But at the same time, who cares if you're Thiago Santos? Because goes out, gets a win that he needed very badly, goes home with 2 paychecks, is about to be a dad. Who cares what anybody thinks? But sort of adding to that slow countering patient style he used, you can make an argument, AK, and he discussed this at the media day, the approach he took in his last fight might actually be his best path to victory against a guy like Ankalaev. So what do you think about that? What do you think about this fight in general?
Yeah, look, the more strategic he can be against a guy like Ankalaev, the better. I just don't know if he's going to have a choice in the matter. As Jose pointed out, Ankalaev is just 29 years old. He's in his prime. He's very explosive. He is a Dagestani 29. So that's a pretty hard 29. He's got some serious like training mileage on him, along with just like general life experience. But Thiago Santos is a real life 38. And also, again, in terms of fight years, probably well past 40. So it's great to want to be patient. It's great to want to say, I'm going to go that sort of this hard five rounds. But man, can you do it against a guy like as talented as Ankalaev? I don't know. Because the counter to that is maybe his best option is to instead, you know, go berserk in round one and try and get that first round finish. He's shown, man, he can hurt anybody at 205. Like, he's finished Jan Blachowicz. He had some success against Glover. So maybe that's the way. Maybe he can't afford to be patient. Maybe if he lets, if he tries to extend the fight too long, that plays in Ankalaev's hands. Again, the younger fighter. So I do like the idea that he can maybe drag Ankalaev into a more tactical fight, because it's not like Ankalaev is some berserker either, you know, who can only last like, you know, who has to get it done in the first or second round. But boy, it's a lot easier said than done. And it just feels like there's so many more ways for Thiago Santos to lose this fight than there is for him to win them. And that really just speaks to how good Ankalaev is.
I feel like we need to kind of keep the spotlight on you, AK, for a moment, if we could, because people have actually questioned your nickname this year, the Prince of Positivity, especially these last couple of fight night cards. Your gymnastics score has not been all that high. You basically put it at like the minimum number that you actually allow yourself to give these cards on paper. I feel like this one might be a little bit different. So what are we looking at here? Do you want to explain yourself to the people who think that you might be the Prince of Meh instead of the Prince of Positivity?
Well, I have been the Prince of Meh for a couple of weeks. I've also been the Prince of Positivity for cards that other people weren't looking forward to. I quite enjoyed the Strickland Hermanson card for what it was outside the top two fights. I liked that one ahead of time. I liked it after. But there are two cards recently. I think the one where, you know, unfortunately RDA fell out, the Makhachev RDA fight. So that, you know, that was almost not their fault that it lost a really big main event. And we were sort of left with the intrigue of Bobby Green, which was fun to talk about. In execution, you know, wasn't that fun to watch, unfortunately. But that card was, I mean, again, that had the quote unquote Wellington Turman, Misha Serkinov co-main event. Again, not really a co-main event. And same with the card, the Walker, what was the Walker Hill card. And my beef with these cards is, one, they were just filled with fights that I felt like had low importance as far as divisional, you know, ranking, as far as what could it mean for them moving towards a title shot, plus potentially low entertainment value, plus a lot of fighters making their debuts. Again, we know that's what the Contender Series is for, is to bring these, you know, these new names in, and that's fine. But it just felt like there was quite a cluster of these names getting put on there, and it just didn't look good on paper. I think we have a much better card to look forward to. I'm definitely the Prince of Positivity with this one on Saturday. Terrence McKinney's fighting again. He's so exciting to watch. Khalil Rountree and Carl Roberson, that's like a perfect like little light heavyweight fight to put on the main card. You're pretty sure someone's getting KO'd. Alex Caceres getting a well-deserved main card spot, and then a lot of good names on the prelims too. Yes, we have some debutants, but some who I know have a lot of steam behind them. I've heard a lot of good things about AJ Fletcher. Camilla Kirk had a great debut against Makwan Amirkhani. Chris Moutinho, I actually am excited to see him again. I know a lot of people kind of treat him as a punchline because the O'Malley fight. So this card has depth and has a strong main card. I didn't even mention Alex Pereira and Bruno Silva. I know we'll do some deep cut talk later, but again, just a cursory glance of the card, like this is legitimate. This is like an 8.5, I feel like, at best.
Yeah, we spoke on to the next one. I feel like this is the best fight night card of the year so far. I mean, I know it's only March, but thus far, I think this is the best fight night card of the year. But going back to the main event, Jose, we like to ask this question during these preview shows because we have two high-level fighters. Both need wins for different reasons. Santos needs it to stay in contention. He'll probably still have a little bit of a ways to go, but I mean, if he goes out there and beats Ankalaev, he's absolutely in play. While Ankalaev, if he goes out there and gets an impressive win, you can make a strong argument that he gets the winner of Teixeira versus Prochazka when they fight in June. Maybe he finds himself as a backup for that fight if something goes wrong and one of these guys can't make it. So like you said, even though 205 isn't the deepest division on the planet, and a loss doesn't hurt on a massive scale because of that. Who do you think needs this one more, Santos or Ankalaev?
Probably Thiago Santos, solely to keep him, his name relevant at the top of the light heavyweight division. Like, yeah, he fought John Jones, took him to the brink. I remember a lot of people even, I'm not in this category, but I know a lot of our fans when we were streaming the press conference thought that Thiago Santos won on with no knees. But then what? He lost three in a row against the three really high level competition, like three incredible fighters, and one of them is a current champion. So Thiago Santos obviously needs this. If he loses, that's what, 4 or 5, if correct me if I'm wrong. So anytime you lose 4 or 5, regardless of who you're losing it to, it's not a good look, especially if you're losing to the high level guys. The UFC has cut bait with a lot of guys that have surprised us solely because they're expensive and they're not going to be fighting for the title anymore, like JDS and like Overeem, Yoel Romero, all these guys. So Thiago Santos is almost 40, if I'm not mistaken, and losing 4 or 5, pushing 40, regardless of how exciting you are, is not the best look. I mean, we were having the same conversation about Johnny Walker and Jamal Hill, and I says if Johnny Walker goes out there and just absolutely gets melted in the first round, that's worst case scenario. So I'm going to reiterate the same thing. If Thiago Santos goes out there and just gets either 50-44 or just gets decapitated in round one, not a good look. But Thiago Santos has put on some epic performances, even in losses. So I'm not expecting that against this one. Well, I'm expecting something like that in this one, I should say. But obviously, if Ankalaev loses, I don't think he falls that far, especially because the UFC kind of wants to make a foothold in Abu Dhabi. Anytime they go back to that part of the world, I assume he's going to be on that card. So it's in a high-profile spot. So even a loss here, I don't think hurts him too much. It might just be a speed bump down the road.
AK, according to our friends at DraftKings, the line on this fight has closed a little bit. Yesterday, I looked at it, Magomed Ankalaev was a minus 600 favorite. But right now, as I look at it currently, some money coming in on Thiago Santos. Ankalaev now a minus 490 favorite. Comeback on Thiago Santos, plus 360. So who needs this one more, AK? Can you make the... Because it took... We've been waiting for Magomed Ankalaev to get a fight like this for like 2 years. Get a main event spot, get a veteran name, a guy who's fought for the title, like just looking for that big fight. Like Volkan Ozdemir, yeah, good name, but Thiago Santos, I think, is like a little bit better of a step up. We're in a 5-round fight. This is the kind of fight we're looking for, and it took a while for him to get here. So can you make the argument that Magomed Ankalaev needs this one more, or are you with Jose that Thiago Santos needs to win this fight more than Ankalaev does?
No, definitely. There's a strong argument that Ankalaev needs it. He legitimately probably has a title fight on the line. There's certainly a case to be made that he might need one more after this, but it puts him at least on the short list. If he won this fight in dominating fashion, there would be zero surprise if he was not necessarily guaranteed, but ends up getting a title shot sometime this year without having to fight again. So that's a lot. I mean, that's huge. Jose mentioned, the Paul Craig setback. He's had a bunch of weird little bumps that have prevented him from getting that title shot that he's clearly like talented enough to get. The Paul Craig loss was one of the most unlikely, shocking losses in history, a fight he was dominating for 14 minutes and 59 seconds. And then he has this kind of pointless two-fight feud with Jan Kuchelaba, which takes up his entire 2020 because of the, there was the controversy with the stoppage in the first one, which wasn't his fault. It was kind of Kuchelaba being a bit of a goof and, faking that he was hurt. And then really, we kind of could have moved on. I'm glad we did get the rematch. But for Ankalaev's purposes, we kind of knew he was a better fighter than Kuchelaba. So he had to prove it twice. And that, again, that took up a whole year. That was the only two fights he had in 2020, and then he gets back to business, takes out Krylov, takes out Volkan Ozdemir. So he does need this. It would be such a shame for him to hit another weird bump. Now, unlike Thiago Santos, yes, he can lose here and still very likely fight his way to a title shot, but again, now we're talking about probably waiting another year. He probably has to get another win later this year, and then we're probably waiting until 2023 before he gets a title shot. So if you're Ankalaev, I mean, that sucks. Like, the prospect of that sucks, because we're talking about him being 29. But man, life comes at you fast in MMA. One day you're, hey, he's just 29. The next day you're, man, this guy's 32 and he still hasn't fought for the title. It happens so, so quickly. And I don't think that's going to happen to Ankalaev. But you take a weird loss to a veteran like Thiago Santos, and who knows what else happens after. It gets dark real fast, as they say. So I absolutely would say that Ankalaev has as much, if not more, to be fighting for than Thiago Santos.
Wow, like an MMA, almost like Ferris Buellerism right there. Life comes at you fast, AK. I like that. Well done. How to turn that into MMA. So we got a couple of like interesting factors in this fight. One, it's the five rounder, which, you know, Thiago Santos has been there many times. This is Ankalaev's first UFC five rounder. And then we got the fact that this is at the apex. So we got the smaller cage. That might play a factor into this fight as well. So with that being said, Jose, time for the picks. We'll begin with you. Who gets this one done? Heavy favorite, Ankalaev. Maybe gets himself into a title fight, or can Thiago Santos pull off the big upset and get into the title discussion himself?
When I say he can absolutely pull off the upset, I'm just answering it in the terms of the question. I don't think Thiago Santos winning would be that massive of an upset. I mean, the man is an incredibly high level mixed martial arts fighter, an incredibly dangerous Muay Thai fighter. But at the end of the day, I do think Ankalaev gets it done. I just think he's stronger, faster. This is his, it's weird to say, but I just think he's clicking at all cylinders right now. Thiago Santos, his last fight was left much to be desired. Even his two previous few losses after that left a lot to be desired. I just think it's Ankalaev's fight to lose. I'm not quite with Jed in saying that he's going to be a future champion, because I think Yuri Prochazka is a bad dude and I think he's going to win the title. And then I would like to see that fight at some point, but Magomed Ankalaev is just an absolute monster. His last fight against Volkan Ozdemir, again, was another former title challenger. And Ankalaev barely broke a sweat and just battered that man in Abu Dhabi. Before that, I believe it was Nikita Krylov, who I've been saying for a long time is one of the more underappreciated light heavyweights in the history of the UFC. And he, again, barely broke a sweat and then had those two weird fights against Jan Kutalaba. So I just think Ankalaev is the man in 2022. And I think he gets it done against Thiago Santos. I don't know how he's going to get it done, but I do see him having his hand raised at the end of the fight.
AK, who you got?
I'm going Ankalaev with confidence. You know, part of me is tempted to side with the Brazilian vet, which I did a few times on the UFC 272. But listen, I was way off on the Bryce Mitchell Edson Barboza fight. I thought that was a case of, you know, a Brazilian veteran with too much striking, facing a guy who, you know, hadn't shown me yet that they can beat a veteran opponent. Ankalaev's a different case. He's already beaten some veteran guys. He has the striking to hang with Santos, and obviously I think a major grappling advantage. So, I am saying with confidence, you know me, I never like to say so-and-so has no chance to win, but I'm saying with confidence, this is going to be a comfortable Ankalaev win. I think he finishes in the first three rounds. Again, this is no disrespect to Thiago Santos. He's done a lot of great things, but he is getting closer to the end of his career. Ankalaev is right in the thick of what is what could really be a legitimate title run. And I think he goes through Thiago Santos to continue that run.
This is a really interesting fight. And I mean, this is MMA and this is like super obvious for most fights you could ever talk about, but this is one that could go down in a number of different ways. Like it could end in 2 minutes, it could end in the championship rounds, it could go the distance, and you can make an argument like technically for all of these things to happen. Like the small cage plays a factor for me more than anything. Like this is on a pay-per-view and the big cage, maybe I look at things a little bit differently. Because Ankalaev is a really good wrestler, and we've seen it displayed in some of his fights. Others, we haven't needed to see it because he could just crack. Like, he could just crack you. I think Santos is probably the more powerful guy, the more one-punch knockout kind of a fighter. But I think Ankalaev is a little more crafty, a little sneakier. But Ankalaev probably doesn't want to get himself into this, like, all-out slugfest, shot-for-shot battle with Thiago Santos. I think that's not the way he wants to go about this. I think the takedowns, the mere threat of them as the fight goes on, plays a major factor. But if Santos can stay at distance and pick his shots and stay on his feet, I think he has a pretty good chance to win this fight. And I feel like there's two fighters on this card who are being incredibly slept on. Thiago Santos is one of them. Another one we'll talk about in a little bit. Unfortunately, even though I say that, I just feel like Ankalaev's going to land the takedowns. I think he's going to wear Santos down. Eventually, I see Thiago getting a little frustrated, possibly a little desperate, and then Ankalaev will put him away. Third round TKO for Magomed Ankalaev. But Thiago, if you want to take a dog shot on those odds on Thiago Santos, I would not, I wouldn't blame you whatsoever. So as AK said, this is a really good card.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
We got some real competitive matchups. I do want to touch on the co-main event because it's a fun one at 135 between Song Yadong and Marlon Moraes. Song, super talented guy. And every time this guy fights or we're even talking about him, the fact that he's only 24 years old is just unbelievable. So as good as he is, he's only going to get way better. And he faces Marlon Moraes, who has had a pretty tough stretch as of late, been stopped with strikes in three straight fights, four of his last five. But those losses are to the top guys in this division, past and present. Henry Cejudo. Moraes even had his moments in that fight. The Corey Sandhagen fight, the Rob Font fight, and then Rob Dwalishvili, who you could argue if there was maybe any other referee on the planet in the cage with those two guys, Moraes might have got himself a victory, gotten the stoppage, and pulled up this major upset against this incredible fighter, Rob Dwalishvili. Unfortunately, wears himself out going for the kill, and if there's one guy you don't want to get tired against, it's Rob Dwalishvili. So big opportunity for Song Yadong to get a win over a former world champion in Marlon Moraes, former UFC challenger, in a must-win fight, you would have to say, for Marlon Moraes, Jose Youngs. This might actually be, Jose, on paper, the best fight of the weekend. Do you agree with that, or do you not rank it that high in your eyes?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue against it, but it's not my best fight of it. It's not the fight I'm looking for most forward to this weekend, but I'm not gonna, if you're gonna die on that hill, then I'm not gonna argue against it. It's an incredibly high level fight in a division that a lot of us consider one of the best. But yeah, everything about that fight rules. I do think Marlon Moraes is fighting for his UFC career at this point, like you said, pointing out all those losses, and he had the quote-unquote win over Jose Aldo, which a lot of people thought Jose Aldo won, so he could theoretically be on a 5-fight losing streak at this point. So another loss to another high level bantamweight, and I hate to say it, if Marlon loses badly again, we'll probably see him in Eagle FC next. It's an unfortunate, I'm not even saying unfortunate in terms of like Eagle FC being a bad promotion, I just, there's a lot of fighters I want to see Marlon Moraes fight in that happened to be in the UFC. Now I'm going to watch Marlon Moraes fight wherever he fights. But at the end of the day, I actually think Marlon Moraes is going to win this fight. Song Yadong is super impressive, but again, he's 24. I think he lost to Marlon Vera. And then that weird draw against Cody Stamann was also weird. So he's had a couple performances that I don't think he either deserved to get his hand raised, and vice versa. The weird fight against Casey Kenny was a split. I actually scored that pretty comfortably for Casey Kenny, but I don't remember it specifically, but I do remember I scored for him. But I just think Marlon Moraes, more experience, more ways to win. Song Yadong hits incredibly hard. He trains with Team Alpha Male, so you know he gets a lot of training partners around Marlon Moraes' size. I just think Marlon Moraes gets this done against the... And again, Marlon Moraes beating Song Yadong is just a speed bump in Song's career. A lot of people consider him a future title challenger. Just right now, on March 12th, 2022, I just think Marlon Moraes has more ways to win, and his back is against the wall, so he's probably going to throw everything. Or it's going to be one of those weird fights like Thiago Santos did against Johnny Walker, where he just kind of controls the fight or something weird like that. But I think Marlon Moraes gets this done. He has more ways to win.
AK, bantamweights, am I right? And I know you've been a tough grader on these quote-unquote co-main events on these fight night cards, AK, but this one has to pass the AKI test, right? This is co-main events. This is not second-to-last fight territory. This is co-main event in your eyes, right?
This is legit. This is the number... Marlon Moraes, the number 11 ranked bantamweight in MMA Fighting's global rankings. Okay, so that's a ranked guy. He's fought for the UFC title for. He's a former World Series of Fighting champion. Song Yadong, again, as Jose mentioned, just a blue chip prospect. Uriah Faber has said years ago, he said this guy is going to win the UFC title someday. So I don't know how close we are to that, but Marlon Moraes is like the perfect litmus test for that. This is one of those crossroads fights, right? I mean, this is where we learn a lot about Marlon Moraes. You know, there's no shame in losing to a Rob. There's no shame in losing to a Rob Font. There's no shame in losing to a Sandhagen. But as Jed Meshew is always reminding me, at some point, you've got to just start winning fights again. It doesn't matter who your competition is. You know, once you reach this level, the UFC is not going to help build you back up. They're not going to throw you freebies unless for some reason you decide to like jump in on short notice and take a fight, which is, again, not really advantageous for a veteran to do either, because the game is so unpredictable and you wouldn't risk that. So he's in a very tough spot facing a guy. He's almost a decade older than, so hungry, has a knack for winning fights. Say what you want about some of those decisions. Casey Kenney, Chito Vera, Cody Stamann, he just has a way of getting away without a loss outside of the getting decision by Collar Phillips. So, man, this is so dangerous for Marlon. But I do think this doesn't go to a decision. I do think this goes to a finish. And in that case, I am favoring Marlon. I'll go as far as say, I think Marlon maybe becomes the first guy to submit Song Yadong. We haven't seen that as like a particular weakness for Song, the grappling. But I think, again, this is sort of a do or die, wounded animal situation. And I think we get the best of Magic on Saturday and we do get a submission finish from him. I'm not super confident about it. Song Yadong is great, but I will, this time I am leaning towards the Brazilian bet.
Yeah, Song's a -240 favorite. Comeback on Marlon is +195. I love this fight. It's a tough fight. I'm curious to see what Marlon's approach is going to be in this fight, because when I spoke with him prior to the Merab fight, I mean, he just looked, you could feel the aura. He was feeling himself. The positivity was there. Said he was healthy for the first time in a long time. Wasn't hampered by lingering, annoying injuries. Dude was ready to go, and it showed in the fight. Like, he looked outstanding early, clipped Merab. He hurt him bad, had that killer instinct, and it actually was to his detriment to have that killer instinct, but no one should really fault him for that, because very few thought Merab would actually survive that onslaught, or anybody would survive an onslaught like that. But, you know, it seems obvious, but if Song can get this fight extended, get it into the third round, his chances to win increase quite a bit. But I'm with both of you guys. I think Marlon Moraes gets it done. I think he will wobble Song early. I don't think he'll go in and just blow his gasket. If he does hurt him, I think he'll be a little more patient with the finish. So I'm with you guys. Give me the Magic Man for the upset. So before we go to the peeps, what's the fight on this card outside of these two Jose Youngs that you have your eye on the most, and why? What's your Jose Youngs high-level martial arts pick outside of the main and co-main event?
The main card. That is literally the answer. Every single fight on the main card is a high level. Like, there's even fights on the prelim card. Like, we talked about this, but this fight card is absolutely fantastic. Every single fight, because I knew you were going to ask this. So this morning I was sitting down and I was trying to pick a low-key banger. Every single fight on the main card is a 10 out of 10 martial arts competition. But if we're going to include storylines and everything, I mean, it's Alex Bejeda, Bruno Silva. Alex Bejeda is saying all the right things, kind of hype a future rematch against Israel Adesanya, the current middleweight champion. And this is prize fighting after all. So the more interested fans are in a certain fight, the more likely that fight will be made. Bruno Silva has been absolutely melting fools for a long time. I think how many fights do you have in the UFC? 3 or 4, maybe 2 or 3. They both went by TKO. And then I think he had 3 or 4 KO wins in M1 as well, including, if I'm not mistaken, against Alexander Shlemenko, former Bellator middleweight champion. So Bruno Silva is an incredibly violent fighter who happens to be a very nice man. I think he has like 18 or 19 total KO wins out of like 20-something or something like that. And then Alex Bejeda, the second he signed on to the UFC, the conversation of who's the best striker in the UFC had another element to take into consideration. So if we're just going MMA, Bruno Silva probably wins. I haven't seen a whole lot of Alex Pereira's grappling, but he's knocking fools out like he should as an incredibly high-level glory kickboxer, and I really want to see, selfishly want to see them him rematch Israel Adesanya. Don't know who's going to win. Don't particularly care, but someone's dying in that fight, and that is my highly technical prediction. Someone gets carted off, and I have no idea who.
That's my choice as well. AK is gone. He has turned into a hologram silhouette of a long-haired woman. Now he's back, I can't hear him. Now he's muted. A professional broadcast through and through here with MMAfighting.com. But I'm with you, Jose. I think this is the fight. I think people... This is kind of like the oh yeah fight, because you look at the top like 4 or 5 fights on the card, and then it's almost like you almost forgot that this fight was on the card. But I mentioned people sleeping on Thiago Santos. Bruno Silva is number two. He might be 1B in this conversation. Everyone's sleeping on Bruno Silva. He's not getting mentioned in a lot of this stuff, man. Everyone's, you go and look at everybody's predictions. Everyone's picking Alex Bajedic to go in there and melt this guy. Like, what is going on here? This is a guy who in the only award show that matters was number three. MMA Fighting Rookie of the Year voting. 3-0, three knockouts. Took three hard shots of the ding-ding against Andrew Sanchez, overcame it, gets a finish, finishing fools left and right. Nobody's talking about this guy, and I think he's a very live underdog, but that fight's going to be absolutely incredible. This has been the Alex Bajeda show since the fight was booked. It's been the Alex Bajeda show all week in terms of how people view this fight. Like, people think just Bruno's the next victim for this guy, and Bruno is super legit. So I love this fight for multiple reasons. AK, what's your non-main event / co-main event fight of the night you're looking forward to and why?
Yeah, look, how can you not be excited about the Silva-Bajeda fight? I mean, it's Silva has, a blindado, we'd say, because there's so many Bruno Silvas running around, has spoiler written all over him. I mean, him and Chris Curtis and Rodriguez were like three of my favorite like stories of the middleweight division. Like they kind of breathed some air into it. We just saw Rodriguez lose to Petrosian, unfortunately, but outside of that, like it felt like just a nice little burst of life, and three guys who were like veterans too. It wasn't like new guys, like unpredictable properties. It was like legitimately, you know, three guys who could do some damage. So obviously I'm excited for that fight, but I am so fascinated to see what's going to happen with Terrence McKinney. I don't know if that one win he had earlier this month, I guess it wasn't this month. It was still the end of February, right? Okay. So technically not this month. So he still has not reached the ranks of the Favs in our global rankings, fighters also receiving votes. It's a real phrase, guys. Kids are using it. Okay. But I wonder if he picks up another first round finish of Drew Dober, man, I mean, that might push. I don't know if that's going to push people into our top 15s. I'm definitely going to have to think about it. There's so much hype and so much excitement around a guy like this who has such an amazing story. He's on a ridiculous finishing streak. Like, I don't know if, you know, I don't think we make enough because the story is so cool. I shouldn't say cool. I mean, somewhat tragic, but also inspirational the way he came back from it. I don't think people realize how he came to the UFC. He started off as 2021, 16-second TKO. Followed that with a 17-second head kick knockout. 72 seconds his next fight, and then he makes the debut with UFC and sets the record for the fastest finish by a debuting fighter. Fastest finish in lightweight history, 7 seconds. So, and then he shows off his grappling. He's done everything you can to make himself look like someone who will be a future UFC lightweight champion. It is too much too soon for sure to be making a claim like that. But if he takes out a guy like Dober, who has been ranked by the UFC, he's been top 15 in the UFC previously. Man, I mean, we're talking about him maybe coming in for a spot on his own. So I am so intrigued by that fight. And Drew Dober is just an exciting fight in general. So it's a great partner for him. And it's a great opportunity for McKinney, who is living up to what he said. He said, hey, book me as soon as possible if I'm healthy. Got a clean bill of health. Here he is 2 weeks, 2 weeks after his last fight. And that to me is like the non-main event banger.
We got Alex Caceres, Sadiq Youssef on this main card, which I really love that fight. Khalil Roundtree, Carl Roberson, Jose mentioned that one earlier. Matthew Semelsberger, AJ Fletcher on the prelims, JJ Aldrich, Julian Robertson on the prelims, Trevin Jones, Javid Basharat making his UFC debut. That's on the prelims. Damon Jackson, Kamuela Kirk, Sabina Mazo, Miranda Maverick stepping in on short notice. She's back. Cody Brundage, Dalcha Lagambula, Guido Canetti against the returning Chris Moutinho, and then Tefan Inchukwi versus Azamat Mirzakhanov. So there's going to be a lot of highlights on this card. I have a feeling some good fights, some highlight reel finishes. This is exactly what you're looking for. So
the 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, California, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Let's go to the peeps. Let's see what they have to say. And they can ask about anything.
Mike, did you see the poll?
I did not, but I figured there's one coming.
Tell us about the poll.
Did you know that there's a poll? I just want to remind people, they might not have seen it. I whipped it out as soon as we started this this show. So I asked, how excited are you for Saturday's UFC Vegas 50 event? The options were obviously the top, peeing myself with excitement, looks okay, will watch, hard pass, and then worst lineup ever. So mostly positive. It's 80.
Not,
it's eight.
A lot of pant peeing.
Listen, it's well, not as much as I'd like to see normally, but it's 87%. It's 87% positive. 63% looks okay, will watch. That's good. I mean, that's, you know, if you have ESPN Plus and you have nothing else to do, they'll have it on. That's good, I think. And 23% soiled. So that's pretty strong. You like to see it.
So this is wear your diapers.
I mean, if you rephrase that first one, do you think that number would have been higher?
Quite possibly, yes.
Okay. Fair enough for future polls. Let's see what the peeps have to say.
Right.
The innuendo with these poll explanations.
I don't hear it.
Is it better for Mavish trajectory that she has taken two losses early in her career? That is, will these losses help her become a contender in the future opposed to getting too close to the sun? So Miranda Maverick's an interesting tale, AK, because she comes out, has a tremendous debut, just looks sensational. She goes on the media tour. Everyone's asking her about Valentina Shevchenko. She's saying that, you know, give me a couple of years. I'm going to fight her. I'm going to beat her. She's already sizing her up, already breaking her down. And then she's got a couple losses now. Now she's trying to bounce back, jumping in on short notice against Sabina Mazo. Do you think these losses help her become a contender in the future? Or maybe, you know, I think a lot of us are very high on her. Maybe we're a little too high on her. What are we thinking here?
Normally I'd say yes, especially because she's only yes that the loss will help her because she's only 24 years old. I think if you look at any fighter's record, not any fight, I would say, but there are several fighters that we consider stars now, that we consider dominant fighters now, who had sort of odd losses in their records in their early 20s. They just weren't in the UFC. They weren't under that microscope. So it's almost unfair to just say, to view these losses that way, just because they happened in the UFC. It's a different kind of division. It's a different kind of opposition. Again, she's only 24. However, Miranda Maverick has the disadvantage of being a well-rounded human being. So my concern for her is that she has, this sounds horrible, kids, stay in school. Don't listen to what I'm about to say. My concern for her is that she has interests and passions outside of fighting. It's very well documented that as she was being a full-time fighter, she was also pursuing a PhD. She's a very intelligent young woman, super talented fighter, obviously. But if someone like her, I feel like loses fights, I almost feel like there's that option of like, oh, okay, fighting didn't work out for me. I have other things to do. I don't know if she has that same desperation. Now, I could be completely wrong. You know, Miranda Maverick could smack me into the face and say, look, there's nothing I care more about than fighting. You're a jackass. And I would totally understand that. But this is just, again, from the outside looking in, I feel like because she has options, I do wonder how much more losses she'd be willing to take and climb out of that hole in the rankings to someday become a contender, because the talent is there. We know that talent is there. She's a very good athlete, but we've seen her now lose clearly to one fighter who's younger than her, and then really get robbed of victory against Macy Barber. So yes, on paper, it should make her stronger. But again, if you know more stuff about her, I do wonder if fighting is something that she feels that she has to dedicate everything in her life to. I don't know.
So she lost that fight because she studies too hard? Is that what you're saying, AK?
No, she lost that
She lost to Aaron Blanchfield because Aaron Blanchfield is the better fighter right now.
She lost to Blanchfield because Blanchfield's a beast. Yeah, but the question is, how much can she learn from her losses? And I don't know how much she can learn from a fight like that. I think that's a very discouraging loss.
I think the Blanchfield loss is going to be great for her, because that's a loss that really teaches you a lot. The Barber loss, I'm going to put this little graphic up real quick. Just a reminder, that was one of the robberies of the year. I know we throw that word around, but look at that. Just look at that.
Oh, listen, anyone who follows Robbery Review knows I started doing Robbery Review to dispel the notion that certain fights are robberies. This fight was a robbery. You guys can find that at mayfind.com. You can Google Robbery Review and Miranda Maverick and Macy Barber. That's one of the rare fights that I said, yeah, listen, this is a robbery. The judges just clearly got this one wrong.
Yeah, I think
I think this is actually a great fight for her. Her jumping in to fight Sabina Mazo, excellent. I don't know who manages her. Actually, yeah, I forget who manages her, but whoever did and brought this to her attention, smart move. This is a very winnable fight for her. Sabina is tough, man. She can crack, but if Miranda gets this fight to the ground, she should win this one rather convincingly. So I think this is the perfect fight for her to come back to. Jose, your thoughts on Miranda Maverick and her coming back after these two losses?
I mean, it's the women's flyweight division. You can win three, four in a row, and all of a sudden you're fighting for the title. I think at one point, including myself, I thought Miranda Maverick. I don't think I never said Miranda was going to win the title, but I think she would just get to at least a title shot pretty rapidly. She was saying all the right things. She even called out Antonina Shevchenko, I think, after her win over Jillian Robertson, just because, like, you know, if I beat her sister, that's a quicker path to the title. So even she was trying to take that quick path to the title. The Macy Barber fight, she won. There's really nothing to learn from it because she won the fight. I don't care what the judges said. So, yeah, you win or learn. She won. She can't learn anything from that. And then Aaron Blanchfield, I think, is just a better fighter. I'm a big fan of Tracy Cortez. She's a very nice human being. Aaron Blanchfield definitely beat Tracy Cortez in Invicta. Aaron Blanchfield should be undefeated. But Miranda Maverick also has a couple losses in Invicta, and not even like knockout or submissions. Like, she just got beaten up early in her career. So losses aren't new to her. She'll learn. And if you remember her loss to Aaron Blanchfield, she was not in the mood to talk to her coaches. She kind of stormed out. The next day, she put out this statement saying she doesn't know what happened. She just didn't perform this and that. So if anything, I don't think there's anything technically to learn, because she didn't really do anything against Aaron Blanchfield. Mentally, she didn't even have the answers of what happened to that. So maybe a different mental approach, or maybe dealing with certain things inside the cage. But technically, I don't think there's much to learn from the Aaron Blanchfield fight. She just got beat up by just a better fighter.
Yeah. I really saw the Aaron Blanchfield Maverick fight as, I mean, I know not everything's the same, but kind of like Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway fighting on the early prelims. I'm not saying these two fighters are going to be the next Shevchenkos, but I think both of these fighters are going to be permanent top 10 fighters for a while. They just fought very early in their UFC career. That's all that was to me.
Yeah, and let me say, I hope I'm very wrong about my you know, saying that, oh, because Miranda Maverick is a well-rounded human being, she might not become a UFC champion. Casey, feel free to clip that later someday when she gets her title shot. And remember when this idiot said you couldn't chase a PhD and chase a UFC title? Like, just clip that, and then we'll spread that out there, and I'll be very embarrassed. So I hope she proves me wrong. Yeah.
Also, like Mike said, Sabina Mazo is really good. She gets a lot of head kick knockouts for a lady. So this is not Miranda Maverick bounces back easy. She's fighting a really high level striker too. So this is a good fight.
Yeah.
Mike, we've said taller. This division is very competitive. Like, this division is so much better than people give it credit for. Like, it's a really good division.
Also, let's not forget, Sabina Mazo's loss to Alexis Davis is a bantamweight, and then she drops it back down after that and just lost to Maria. The Maria Agapova fight, I think, loss is a little weird. I thought she was going to dominate that, and I think if they fight 10 times, I think Sabina wins 9 of them. Hmm. She just got submitted against Maria.
Yeah. Actually, I hope whoever loses this fight I hope the UFC doesn't. I hope the loser gets another fight, because it'll be a 3-fight losing streak for the loser, and both of these women deserve to be fighting in the UFC. So,
yeah,
it's a very important fight.
Sabina had Marina Moroz. Sabina had Marina Moroz in her first UFC fight, and Marina is so underrated.
Yeah, she is.
Like, as you saw this past Saturday.
Yep, yep.
I will say, though, leaving the UFC might not be the worst thing. You know, as you said, UFC is not the place to rebuild your confidence and career, right? So it might not be the worst thing.
I know we kind of answered this before, but.
I mean, he's definitely in the hunt with a win. I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
You're main event fight night.
I mean, it's just a difference of. Yeah, I mean, he's either getting the next shot or he needs one more win. So, that's it.
Does he have the
number
push,
seven in our rankings?
Do you think? That's what
I think he has the fan. I think he has the fan push in the sense that if the UFC goes back to Abu Dhabi in October, would you be surprised if Ankalaev and Islam Makhachev fought for the titles on Abu Dhabi? Not me.
Nope.
I think it'd be a geographical thing. Or even if Islam fights Beneil in Abu Dhabi in the Coleman, and you know, Ankalaev could fight in the main event, and Islam, well, honestly, Islam and Hamzat could both main event over Ankalaev, regardless of whether it's a title shot or not. But yeah, all those guys are going to get fast tracked to titles solely because, you know, the UFC has to touch down. And even Dana said, like, if Islam fights for the title, it's probably going to be in Abu Dhabi. So it's going to happen. Okay.
Comment from Andrew Kelly.
Khalil Roundtree brings the violent vibes. Love that dude when he's in the zone. And see, that's the last five words. That's always the thing with Khalil when he's in the zone. Because when he is in the zone, we get the performance against Mendes and Bukauskas. We get the performance against Eric Anders. When he's not in the zone, yeesh, this could be a tough night for him. But I like the matchmaking. Hope good vibes. I'm sending out good vibes, both guys. We have an exciting fight.
Yeah, Roundtree is one of those guys, when he wins big, and he wins. It's scary when he wins. He brings that type of violence when he's on his A game.
Or he just puts you in a wood chipper, like, because Eric Anders didn't get finished, but Eric Anders basically just got shot in the face for 15 minutes.
You know what? It felt like he got finished. In my mind, I felt like Eric Anders got knocked out because it was so one-sided. You're right.
Yeah, because then everyone after that fight, because even before that, like, I know he lost Johnny Walker on Johnny Walker's Rise, but he freaking knocked out Gokhan Saki, which is still crazy to think about. And then that started with, like, oh, Bangkok rated Khalil Roundtree, and then he just got eaten alive by Eon and I think Copenhagen, if I remember correctly.
Okay, I'm not sure what this question means. I'm gonna throw it up there.
Is AK's chest tattoo bigger or smaller than Tobago's?
Tobago, what
does this mean? Anything
that had to be Tiago. Tobago had to be Tiago. Tiago.
Autocorrect.
Is my chest tattoo? Is my chest tattoo showing? Is my chest tattoo showing? Oh no, hold on.
I never get a real job with that chest tattoo. Okay.
People aren't supposed to know about that. Okay. Sorry about that. Next question.
Yeah, button that up.
That's embarrassing. I apologize. That's embarrassing. I didn't know it was showing.
Is he fighting for his UFC job? Is it that dire? You think we're there? I mean, Jose, you were kind of like leaning in that direction, but I don't think you fully.
I think if he loses, he'll get maybe one more. But I think he's not going to be in the main event if he loses, because he's an exciting fighter. Like, you're going to have to give him guys to, like, there's people on the up and up. Like, Thiago Santos can just be a gatekeeper. Or, I mean, he could drop to middleweight again if he wanted to, because he jumped up to light heavyweight kind of a means to an end, because the UFC needed a last-minute replacement for a couple fights, and he just kept winning. So he stayed. So he could drop to middleweight at some point.
Yeah, I think for Santos, his job is fine with the UFC, but I think the idea of him ever fighting for a title again might be gone if he loses tomorrow night.
Yeah,
but yeah, you're right. He's super exciting. And I don't see any reason why the UFC wouldn't keep him kind of as that kind of top 10, top 15, you know, gatekeeper, which is a great role to be in. It's just, it pays the bills. So nothing wrong with that.
If I remember, like, his last the middleweight win was against Kevin Holland, if I remember correctly. And, like, he won. And then I'm pretty sure, like, he ended up taking a last minute fight to replace someone. And then I can't remember who it was against. It might even have been Jimmy Manoa.
Oh, maybe. Is that Eric Anders?
Well, no. So I think Jimmy Manoa, if I remember correctly, I think Jimmy Manoa was supposed to fight Glover Teixeira, and then Jimmy Manoa got hurt, so Thiago Santos stepped in. Or he stepped in for Glover, I mean, to fight Jimmy Manoa. And then Jimmy Manoa ended up getting hurt, so Eric Anders stepped in. So the original fight was two completely different guys, and then they ended up having two middleweights fight at light heavyweight. And then when Thiago won, he ended up then fighting Jimmy Manoa, which is one of the craziest fights I've ever seen in my life. And then he ended up knocking out Jan Hovic in Prague, if I remember correctly. And then he fought John Jones. So again, Thiago Santos only moved up because they needed him to, and he just kept winning. So he could drop to middleweight if he needs a change of scenery, I should say.
I do wonder how many of these fighters, because we know there's a very good relationship between the UFC and Eagle FC, I do wonder how many of these veteran fighters will just start naturally migrating towards Eagle FC, because all the veterans who have gone there have talked about how great the pay is. And Thiago, we mentioned Marlon Moraes earlier, a logical fit for there. Maybe Thiago Santos, if he loses, again, I don't know how many fights he has left, but at some point, just there's a mutual agreement. Okay, don't worry about it. Don't resign. I'm going to go to Eagle and take some fights there.
Wouldn't hate Thiago Santos fighting at 195 if Eagle FC is sticking with these crazy weight classes.
Right?
What would that be? What are we calling that? It's not cruiserweight. It's super... light heavyweight? Is that what we're going to... super middleweight? Super middleweight is what we're going to call it.
Oh, who do I credit? Oh my gosh. Did you see the person on Twitter who... I think it was... I want to say it was Millington, Andrew Millington, who said the 165 should be called svelterweight? I thought that was so good. I thought that was like... how is that not official? How's that not official?
It's super super lightweight is the official
super
one, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, like, so super middleweight fighter, Thiago Santos.
Or wimpy welterweight. How about that?
Welterweight's good. Yeah. I like that.
Shout out Andrew Millington on Twitter for us.
While we're talking Eagle FC, we've got some questions about him.
What happens if Kevin Lee loses? Know.
Well, he's not going to, so bad question.
Yeah.
Anything, guys, stranger things have happened. Come on, crazier things have happened.
It's true. If Kevin Lee loses,
has Kevin Lee lost to someone this so far behind him in the rankings before? I mean, it'll be new to him. Maybe the knockout was he had a kind of a fluke knockout. Leo Santos kind of got him, right? That was his first loss. So
yeah, but 21, 22.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going way back.
But he wasn't that far ahead. Yeah, he wasn't that far ahead yet.
Yeah. So this will be disastrous if Kevin Lee loses.
Like, who's he lost to? Like, I know he's lost to, after Santos, it's like Ferguson, Iaquinta, RDA, Charles Oliveira, and Daniel Rodriguez's last fight. Like, literally, three, like, Charles, RDA, Tony are like three of like the top seven lightweights ever in the history of MMA. And if you lose to Diego Sanchez in 2022, it's probably not a good look.
Yeah, and this is the weight class that he's been begging for years. And actually, everyone has been kind of waiting for this weight class. And yeah, it'll be wild if he loses.
I think, how old is he now? How old is Kevin Lee? Again, he's one of those guys. Remember, I was talking before.
He's not even 30. He's not even 30. He's 29.
He's not even 30?
Yeah, that's the
He's 29?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
His UFC debut was in 2014.
Oh my goodness. And Diego is 40. Okay. So he's 11 years old, Diego's younger 40, oh than Diego is 40. Is it, that's 40 years, 40 of, years young.
Yeah. 40 years.
40 years, 40
years
young,
and recovering from a very serious COVID.
If Kevin Lee loses at a weight class he's been calling for, to a man 12 years older than him that hasn't looked very overly impressive his last few fights, like, I don't know.
I think it's a disaster if he loses for everybody. Yeah. I mean, because Eagle FC is paying him. They went all in on Kevin Lee. Mm-hmm. They got money. I don't know where this money's coming from. I'd be dying to know where all this money's coming from. But they gave a lot of it to Kevin Lee to come over. And this is supposed to be a showcase fight. Like, Diego's a name. And I kind of agree with Damon. Like, he made me feel a little bit better about the matchmaking because I hated it at first. But this is a fight the UFC very likely could have made. Like, they could have easily put this fight together. So Like, it made me feel a little bit better. I'm still, the whole COVID thing kind of irks me out a little bit, but this fight is here for a reason. This is a fight to draw eyeballs because of Diego Sanchez, but this is also a fight to make Kevin Lee look sensational. And if he doesn't, I mean, if he loses to Diego Sanchez tonight,
or even if it's competitive, God, honestly, even if it's, you know, a 29-28,
if it's a Diego fight, if it becomes like a Diego fight, like a brawl, like Larson is like some weird wild.
That'd be awesome.
Unless it's like a Gilbert type of Diego fight where Gilbert was clearly the better fighter, but it just became this crazy Diego brawl. Maybe then.
I rewatched that fight. Was that crazy outside of that third round?
It wasn't.
No, it really wasn't.
No, I agree with you. But I'm just, you know, people would like to.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Because after that fight, after that fight, I was like, this is the craziest fight ever. Then I watched him like, fight. It was a good round.
Remember the crowd? But it was the crowd. It was really the crowd that kind of really brought that fight into it. Yeah.
Well, it's because he dropped it. He dropped Gilbert in the last. So it was like a good 2.5 minutes, I should say. Yeah. But those 2.5 minutes were bananas.
By the way,
I'm looking at it right now. When we were doing BTL yesterday, the betting lines were Kevin Lee -800. Kevin Lee, depending on where you look, if you go to one website, if you go to Five Dimes, Kevin Lee is a -2,000 favorite against Diego Sanchez.
That sounds about right. Like, I think that's crazy, but that sounds about right.
Kevin Lee didn't look horrible against Daniel Rodriguez. Daniel Rodriguez just looked like the bigger fighter, and Kevin just kind of got worn out toward the end.
He didn't look horrible. It was just a weird performance. It's just a weird showing.
Yeah, it just looked like an off night rather than a fighter that just doesn't have it anymore. Daniel Rodriguez.
AL is asking me in the comments, AK, if Kevin Lee loses, will he be in a sticky pickle? My goodness. He will be in the stickiest of pickles. The stickiest of pickles, which you guys have not really mentioned. We've somehow avoided this word during this answering this question. Retirement. Does he have to start? I mean, he's only 29, but does he have to start thinking about, like, what are his options after? I mean, Eagle FC will give him another fight. Eagle FC will win or lose. Embarrassment or not, he's getting it. He will get it. They're apparently paying him well. He'll get another fight. He'll get another fight with Eagle FC. But if you're him, if that happens, are you like, man, I got to think about where, like, is this it for me? Like, is this really career? Like, if, you know,
he'll fight Jake Paul.
Sure.
It's gonna happen.
I don't think there's, if he loses, I don't think retirement, but I think his asking price goes way down, basically.
Sure.
That's about it. Yes. You know, I think, I don't think he's any for. Yeah, he doesn't need to retire, but he ain't going to get the same amount of money. One more question about Eagle FC. I think this is actually a good question.
Will Eagle FC become popular enough that Khabib cannot swerve the PFL Bellator UFC comparisons? I don't think so. I mean, they're a nice alternative. They get a nice little product. I mean, the production's a little WWE-ish with some of the camera angles, but... I mean, I had no issue. I had less issues watching Eagle FC's last U.S. card than UFC 272 this past Saturday. For that, great. And they're bringing in names, great. There's just some of the names that make me scratch my head. And there's so many questions I have. Again, the funding. Where is this money coming from? Two, I want to know how these fighters are being paid. Like, I want to know. I want a list of fighter payouts after all of these cards.
Marshall Rogan.
Yeah, I want to know how much the dominance MMA fighters are getting paid compared to the rest of the roster. Like, I want to know. I think that's a very fair question to ask. Thiago Silva he looked rough. He looked pretty rough at that press conference today. The fact that this man's getting in a cage and fighting, like, good for him. Like, if this is what he really wants to do. But, I mean, I'm concerned about some of the matchmaking and some of the names that they're bringing in. So, I don't know if they'll ever get that popular. Is it a nice alternative? Sure. But I don't know if we're getting to that level yet. I don't know. Yeah. Ways to go.
Yeah, I agree. This is more for a post-fight thing, but I might as well. They're asking us questions.
Sean Chelleth, over under, we get Izzy versus Bejeda before the end of 2023. Wow. I mean, Jose, I know you hate these kinds of questions because you need to see these things play out. You need to see the dominoes fall, but just have some fun with this. Like, let's say Alex Pajeda just goes out there and just bolts Bruno Silva tomorrow. Like, just an incredible knockout. He's the talk of the town. Is this something the UFC is going to push for, like, real quick? Are they going to try to strike while the iron's hot super fast to try to put this fight together, especially since Izzy's eventually going to go up to 205 again?
I don't think they're going to – he's still going to – like, because Alex Pajeda, from what I've seen, wants to fight a lot. So maybe they give him the Khamzat treatment. Like, if he goes out there and gets another flying knee knockout, maybe they give him the Johnny – because let's not mess around. Like, if Johnny Walker had beaten Corey Anderson in Madison Square Garden, he probably would have fought John Jones, correct? He wasn't going to fight Jan Blachowicz in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, like Corey Anderson did. They were going to give him that. So if he goes out there and flying knees someone, goes out there and does the same thing again, I could see it. You know, they're kind of doing it with Khamzat. If Khamzat beats Gilbert Burns pretty dominantly, I wouldn't be surprised if he got the next title shot against Kamaru Usman. If Kamaru Usman obviously gets past Leon Edwards, which I think we all expect him to do whenever that happens. So by the end of 2023, yeah, I could see it. If Alex Pajeda keeps doing his thing. Too many exciting Pajedas in the UFC world right now. But yeah, I could see it. Especially because, you know, the UFC wants to strike while the iron's hot. Izzy has been saying for a long time he wants new, fresh blood. And I know this is technically not new blood, but it is in the MMA world. And how many times are they going to show that knockout? Because have you ever watched that fight between those two? Alex Pettit was not dominating that fight.
Not at all.
Izzy was doing extremely well. I would even say winning until he just got turned into a floor mat. So yeah, I would favor Izzy in that fight, especially in an MMA fight. But yeah, the UFC could for sure pull that in 2023.
I think if Pereira can, like, actually, it's a weird thing. If Pereira actually gets taken down, if he gets taken down and he gets up and then knocks him out, then we kind of see more of his game. If we just kind of wins, I think we're going to be like, well, he's only a stand-up guy. It's a weird thing. He actually needs to get taken down or stuff takedowns and, like, really throw Bruno Silva off. But Bruno Silva's just not the type of fighter either, so I don't really see that. But if Pereira wins big, his next fight will be a Gilbert Burns type of level. You know, like, I'm not fighting Gilbert Burns. He's not fighting Izzy his next fight, but who would it be? Like,
he'll fight, like,
he should fight
Uriah Hall. Who am I missing?
Win or lose, he'll fight Uriah Hall, I think. Uriah Hall. Or that's probably, like, the
or
next.
Or, yeah, no, or you know what? Yeah, or like if Chris Weidman comes back, or Brad Tavares. I know Brad Tavares is still lurking around in the top 15. Like, you know, Izzy's third fight in the UFC was against Brad Tavares in the main event. If Alex Pajeda goes out there and flying knees someone again, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him a main event fight, you know, just to strike Strickland, while they're on top.
Yeah. Strickland's probably a little too risky.
Way too risky. Way too risky. I would also favor
Strickland. I probably would too. But I'd put him against a guy who would absolutely stand in front of him, a favorable matchup, a guy with somewhat of a decent name that gets a reaction when you book him for a fight. Like, I mean, Andre Muniz, up and coming talent, guy could fight for a title, legit threat in this division, gets the Uriah Hall fight, a favorable matchup, but there's still some danger factor to it as well, because if Hall clips him, it's a whole different fight. But yeah, I mean, that's probably the direction they go, and then give him one more against another, like, former title challenger.
Mike, I love the idea of him fighting Weidman. I love that.
I'm giving my on to the next one. Ooh. Call right now. Uh-oh. If Michelle Pajeda, you got me, Jose.
Oh,
if
Alex Pajeda,
you got me. It's contagious.
Price is Right loser theme, go.
If Alex Pajeda gets a first round knockout, I don't care what the circumstances are, whether he gets to show off his takedown defense or not. If he gets a highlight reel first round knockout, I will be telling people he should fight Adesanya next on the next one. I don't care.
He hasn't beat anyone in the top 15.
I don't give an S. Pardon my language. I don't give an S, Casey. I'm sorry. I don't give an S. Sorry. There goes our monetization. I apologize. This is how passionate I feel about this. Cannonier obviously gets the next title shot. Cannonier is obviously going to fight Adesanya. That's the right thing to do. After that, who is like, Look, there's people obviously, you get Muniz, Strickland, obviously ahead of Maeda, but that storyline is of their previous kickboxing fights is, it's just so compelling to me. And I get it. We should have faith in Maeda that he can win one more fight, but I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. Maybe I'm afraid if he does fight a more well-rounded guy that he'll lose the opportunity. I really want to see that fight in MMA. I'm more interested in
the second best middleweight ever to fight in MMA behind Anderson Silva. Mm-hmm. You want him to book him against an unranked guy who's not even in the top 15 in the UFC, not even in the real rankings that are.
Man, did you see that knockout? That's all I need to see. Do you see that 5-second clip of him knocking out Izzy? That's it. I don't care about the context. I don't care who was actually winning that fight. I don't care what happened. I don't care how controversial their first kickboxing match was. That clip is meant to be digested for the common man. I speak for the common man. You know this.
We're losing people. You're turning
off. No, we are gaining people. We are gaining the real people of America. I want to see this fight as soon as possible. I am going to have him skip over Muniz, Strickland, all these guys. If he gets a huge knockout, put him in there with Izzy. Just do it. Just do it.
Another actual answer would be the winner of Jatko Mirshar, I think, because Jatko and Pereira kind of have beef. They were supposed to fight and then didn't fight, and they just talking all that greasiness. And I think Gerald Mirshar is a guy that you can test. He'll test, like, you. Or obviously you saw what Khamzat did to him, but Gerald Mirshar is incredibly well rounded. A lot of submission wins. Doesn't he have like the most in or up there for the most ever in middleweight history for UFC?
Mirshar,
I was strictly talking middleweight, so don't hate that fight either. But yeah, maybe one, maybe two, or if they give him, I'm not gonna say no to a title shot, but it's just not gonna happen.
Oh my god! I just realized
if you mentioned Gerald Mirshar.
I would love.
I think Gerald Mirshar deserves some shine. Gerald Mirshar deserves some shine. After that knockout, the way he came back in 2021 with three submission wins, back to back to back,
sick good fights on that guy. Too. Sick fights. I love watching his grappling.
Awesome fights.
Awesome.
He's so good.
Where's Rockhold?
The dude has. Prayer, 26 submission wins. No, Weidman Rockhold too.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Either way. All right. Let's wrap this up. What we got? Let me find anything else.
You got any Bellator questions?
I didn't see any.
The Bellator. No, because we answered all those on the preview show. That's why.
You know? There you go.
Yeah. Oh no, this is a preview show. We answered all those on BTL. BTL.
BTL. Yes.
Yes, we did. We tried to sell it.
It's a good main card. It's a good main card. I'm saying. Anything else? Anything else? Did we do Under the Radar?
Mm-hmm.
We did?
I think we did.
All right. No, we answered the Marlon Moraes thing. I think we're good.
That gentlemen. It?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Okay, great.
All right. So get ready, everybody. If you're listening to this after the fact, sorry, but Eagle FC is going down in a couple hours, so get ready for that. Jed and I, at some point, will go on Twitter Spaces to relieve you of Henry Cejudo's commentary, so stay tuned for that. We'll be back here tomorrow, 30 minutes before UFC Vegas 50 for the People's Pre-Fight Show, well, post-fight show after. AK and I will be back on Sunday with On to the Next One, so we've got a very busy weekend ahead of us. So for Jose, for AK, shout out to you, Casey, on the ones and twos. He's on a poster now. He's on a fight poster. It's official. Next Saturday, get ready. Casey Lydon getting into the cage. So, well, we have to have our own preview show for that fight.
Next Twitter week, Spaces.
We'll make that happen. So. All right, everybody. Enjoy Eagle FC. We'll see you guys tomorrow ahead of UFC Vegas 50.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.